Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us right now, Mike Opat. We've had him on several times to talk about different things in Hennepin County, but tonight we talked to him about himself because he has made the decision to not run for re-election. That came out of left field to me. I'm sure it didn't to him, but he joins us now. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Good. Are you coaching at all these days?
I'm headed off to a practice at 9 o'clock, believe it or not.
That's 9 o'clock? How'd you get 9 o'clock gym time? How'd you get that short straw?
This is a high school travel team, and we get the short straw. So it's looks a little rough in the winter, a dark night that starts at 9, but we get a good hour in, and we go get warm. So
yeah, nothing wrong with it. I mean, kids are kids. They'll adjust quickly and on the fly. You like coaching, don't you?
I do. I've done a lot of it, and I do like it. I like the, but I'm not as much. I mean, the games are, of course, fun. It's your test, but the practices are a good time because you can see the improvement and keeping them all engaged instead of just the five on the floor. So it's fun.
Yeah, that's a good point. And, you know, a lot of coaches, as they evolve, they find they enjoy practices more than games because, to an extent, it's just what you said. You control practices. And you can get everybody on your team involved as opposed to the kid that doesn't get to play and you feel bad about it, et cetera. But in practice, you can control that everybody plays.
Yep, that's exactly right. And I try to keep them all busy, you know, with the ball. Gone are the days, you know, of just like, okay, let's get in shape. Let's get conditioned here because they're all in shape anyway. So
yeah, it's true. That's a good thing. Let's go play, right? Let's learn the skills.
Yeah,
what's
right.
The hardest
skill? We
only
have an hour. We got to work hard.
What do you think is the hardest skill to teach in basketball?
Right now, I think it's the hardest is to get them off the point line because they all think they belong there.
Isn't that the truth? You know, they make one out of five and they say, see, I can shoot the three.
Have you been watching our games? Because that's about what we make.
No, I've been watching my son. Yeah. You know? And they make just enough to make them believe they're three-point shooters. And they don't really know. You've got to be able to shoot it really well when nobody's on you so that you can do it under stress.
Yes, you got it. You've been in, well, I know, Max, you're in a lot of gyms. So
I'm in a lot of gyms, and I played a lot of basketball in my life. And the mid-range game, it's just sitting there for you. You know, one pump fake and you can get the 15-footer, so it's only 2 points. So what? Have some fun with it and own it, you know?
Well, I'm feeling validated now because that's what we do a lot. I don't know, we'll do it again tonight. Get a good shot fake, one dribble, get some space, and there's nothing wrong with a 10-12-footer.
And many times that opens it up, and all of a sudden, oh, that 10-12-footer, that guy's wide open underneath the basket for a layup, you know?
That's a good theory. I haven't seen a lot of that on my squad.
Mike, what went into it? The decision to, you seem so young to me still, but to say, okay, I've had enough.
Well, I'm not that young, and that's the first thing. And I've been doing it a long time. This is my 28th year, and it's been a great job being a Hennepin County Commissioner. A lot of variety, there's a lot of magnitude to the job. But I'd like to do something else before I retire, and I better get looking at 58. So that's mostly when there's nothing wrong about this job or nothing. I'm really tired of. I've just done most of it, and it's time for a new challenge.
And that's a good time to go out, you know? I mean, when you still feel like you can do it and you still enjoy it. But what is the toughest part of the job?
I think it's the heaviness of the subject matter. So, you know, in counties in Minnesota, we're in the human misery relief business, really. We a lot of social services, a lot of trying to help people keep their mental health. We deal with homeless populations now. Of course, we always have, but it seems to be more of it than ever. A lot of services to the disabled, child protection. We had a big meeting today. We're trying to reform our child protection system. And some of the cases we looked at today, which the folks said were simple, I'm using air quotes now over the radio, had all kinds of different things where stable families might say that's outrageous, but it's really the norm in folks that are having more struggle. So the grind of that is hard because we're never going to fix it. We'll try to make it better, but it's never going to be done.
Mental health. I mean, you're talking about right now the St. Paul Teachers Union talking about that, you know, they're bargaining and not for money as much as they want more mental health support at the school. It's become a topic that has gained a lot of traction in headlines. And obviously you guys have worked with the homeless, the destitute. It's not that we didn't know there weren't mental health issues. Do you feel like we're making strides in identifying it, both from a government agency standpoint and in society, that it's getting the proper notice? Or is it such a slippery slope and such a tricky, because what is bad mental health? You know, we can tell when a knee's hurt. There's all kinds of degrees. What's going on upstairs? Do you feel encouraged or discouraged about where we're at with it?
Both, I guess. I mean, I think discouraged from the point of view that there seems to be more people who are in a crisis mode, more folks. You know, you work downtown, I work downtown, there's much more of a presence of people that are obviously having trouble with their mental health, and they're sometimes acting out, or if not acting out, wandering around. And, you know, it's obvious in the conversations they're having with themselves or whatever, some of the agitation they have with their own bodies, scratching, whatever, things like that. And there's a lot of that, a lot more than I remember from before. On the other hand, I'm encouraged that we have an awareness of it, and we're trying to find solutions. The problem is this wasn't ever something that cities were thought about doing, and it's not really even something counties thought about doing in terms of, hey, guess what you have to do now? It's sort of an obligation creep that I think that is happening in government, where it's just presumed that the counties will take care of it, or the cities, and that's, you know, with no more new money or new revenues.
And I feel bad for the educators, too, because how much do we expect our teachers to know? I mean, the bullying thing is a topic on the front page, and I get that. But they can't be involved in every conversation or pick up on every nuance and what's going on with every kid, nor did they go to school necessarily to do that either. And so I feel bad because I'm not sure, you know, where we should lay this thing sometimes as we try to figure out and try to look for, you know, who has issues like that.
Yeah, we're asking a lot of the schools, and they're feeding kids sometimes, you know, 2.5 meals a day. They're finding after-school things for the kids to do. It's now earlier in a child's life when they're going to public school, and the teachers yet are kind of being hammered about disparities or educational outcomes, and in many cases when there's trouble at home and they don't even know about it. So it's there's a lot for teachers too. The same sort of obligation creep. It's like it's presumed that the schools will take care of it, and they'll be done by 3:30, and the kids will be on the bus on the way home.
Yeah. No, I talked to a principal from an inner city once, and she said she brought a kid home because they had no ride, they'd missed the bus, whatever. Right. And so she went to the house and dropped off the kid, and she said she wasn't prepared when she opened the door for what she saw and smelled in terms of marijuana and everything else. And it was just such an eye-opener because you think you know the kid from school, and you see that, and right, you go, oh, my God, no wonder. I mean, it's remarkable that they even get to school.
You're right, and that's some of what we were talking about today in our child well-being meeting.
Yeah. So what would you say in 2020, as we head down the next decade, Hennepin County, what would be your biggest concern?
Well, that's a great question. I guess it's what I just said before, that there's an acceptance of an obligation creep, and that we end up growing to be everything in terms of human services and social services without enough help from the state, because that's going to land on people's property taxes. And of course, it's hard to sell the county's business to the general public anyway, because we are taking care of people when they're struggling at the most, and for comfortable communities, they don't see it. They might hear about it somewhere or watch it on TV or hear it in our discussion on the radio, but a lot of times there's just not a confidence that it's really happening, that their money's being spent wisely. So I worry that there'll be a loss of confidence in what the county does. And then I think our politics are veering a little bit too far left, and I worry about that a little bit in terms of losing the middle and losing the right in terms of confidence too. But all in all, we're financially stable. The infrastructure is pretty good. I know actually the roads aren't great. We're working on the roads. I worry that the Bonneau Light Rail project will not get done. I hope that gets done. It really needs to happen. But otherwise, you know, in general, things are good, and they'll stay good. They're not going to, you know, I'm not the cause for them being good. So it'll be fine.
What does light rail do for Minneapolis, do you think, you know, over 10 years?
I think as there's more and more density of housing, when people are living closer together, walking more, I think it becomes a great mode to help people get around, and it gives people options where they don't have to buy a car and pay for insurance and all that. I think it's got to be safer than it is and cleaner than it is, and I think there was a good step taken in that direction yesterday, and I think Charlie Zelli will do a good job at the Met Council and make that happen, and we'll have to step up too. But it'll help in my particular suburbs, Robbinsdale, Crystal, Brooklyn Park. It'll give them an option. The bus service out there is not very good and never really has been. So they give an option for that they don't have now for fast, reliable transportation. Also give developers a reason to come out there and build where they haven't done so far.
Mike, of course, one of the many things that you can highlight on your resume is Target Field and what you did to get that built for the Twins, Major League Baseball, in the state of Minnesota, because the city of Minneapolis was dragging their feet, and you stepped up with Hennepin County and made it happen. Now, at that point, now it seems simple as we look at the stadium, et cetera, but at that time, how much political clout did you have to throw in the game, and did you have many fears or reservations about what it could do to your career?
No to the last part, because I thought about it. I was approached for a number of months. And, you know, the economics of professional sports, you know, they're hard to argue for. But in the end, once I decided, I kind of looked in the mirror one day and I said, really, the only that I can't fix, and the county, Hennepin County, can't fix the economics of Major League Baseball. So we're really left with the decision is, do we think we're better off with the Twins or without them? And I did think they'd move eventually, or, you know, something would happen. So it was once I Twins or without them. And I did think they'd move eventually, or, you know, something would happen. So it was once I reminded myself that we're better off with them, or concluded that, then it didn't matter much about, I didn't run for this job to solely keep the job. I ran for it to do some things with it. So that was then I had the goal, and my three colleagues were willing to vote with me no matter what. And we went on about the business of building it, and we chose the right revenue. I think there was some suggestions that we should do hotel taxes and rental car taxes, and they don't. Then you pay a higher mortgage in terms of interest rates and stuff. We chose the right one. It's performing well. The stadium we paid off a decade early, and it sure has done a lot for that part of downtown. So it's been a victory. I am proud of it, and I think it's been a wonderful addition.
Well, and there's funding mechanisms that have come through that have rebuilt weight rooms and done things for the inner city schools for sure. I would still like to see them put a couple of what's become common now in the suburbs are, you know, these schools have domes in the wintertime over the turf fields, and they've got the turf fields now. I hope that'll be the next step for Minneapolis inner city. But you've allowed for people and grants and people to apply for, and it's really beautified and helped bring up to speed some facilities because of that funding mechanism.
Yeah, we did allow for money from that ballpark tax, that 3 cents on $20 to go for weekend library hours, and many of our smaller libraries are open weekends just based on that revenue. And then the $2.5 million or so a year that we spend on the youth sports grants, and that's been able to help the turf fields and playgrounds, and you know, some equipment grants for pitching machines and such for little leagues that don't have a lot of money. We stay out of uniforms and we stay out of fees for kids, but we help, you know, buy the tractor to rake the field that the parents are doing, and the other equipment. Yeah, that's been great. And some of the turf fields in particular in the inner city where there's not so, or inner ring suburbs where there's, or city where there's not many fields, and they want to play soccer on it and lacrosse,
yeah,
and
exactly,
baseball practice and all that. And that field's beat up and useless by the end of May. Now it can go, teams can start earlier, they can go later. And yeah, it's been a great addition. And I know people have appreciated it.
Yeah, I was at the Boys and Girls Club in North Minneapolis today with the prep basketball team there. Spent some time with Troy Bell and Lucas Patterson and others, and talked to one of his coaches, the 10U baseball team, and he says, come watch us play because we don't have a lot of players, but we're pretty good. And I said, you were able to work on those turf fields? Somebody said some. He says, I like to have them on the Rocky – so that they can because if they can play on the Rocky field, they can play on any field. But he was lauding the fact that they had at least a chance now to play on some of those turf fields.
Yeah.
That's step one. You got to have that before you can compete with anybody. Now, what will be next for Mike Opat? What do you want to do?
Well, that's a good question. I don't have anything right now. I'd like to lead something, an organization that's got a good purpose. I've been a leader my whole career, so whether it's something that like a larger nonprofit, or on the other hand, in the private sector to manage a company's corporate affairs, you know, maybe help them relate to government, help them develop a strategy for a new product, or them bringing diverse people together and forging a goal and going out and trying to accomplish it. That's the story of Target Field and a few other things that I've done. So I think that would be a good fit for me. I don't have any particular job in mind, and I'm reminded that I better get a little more specific, but I haven't done this in a while, so I'll spend the next weeks trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
I'm getting a lot of advice.
You can now put your resume on computer and you can change and edit it for the job you apply for. My things have changed a little bit since we were going to college.
A little bit, yeah.
What will be your lasting memory, greatest thing about the last 28 years?
I think the times when we pulled together as a board or as a team or the number of votes and took an important vote that was controversial but the right thing to do. So I put Target Field in there. I put the smoking ban in. You know, we tackled that first with the bars and restaurants. That was highly contentious. But those moments, I feel like, are the ones that I'll remember.
Mike, appreciate it very much, and I hope we can continue to visit. Don't be too hard on him tonight at practice. And remember, free throws win a lot of games.
Yeah, that's another theory, because we've certainly lost a couple by not making them. So thanks for the advice.
I'm hearing you, buddy. Mike, congratulations.
All right, Matthew, thank you.
You bet. Mike Opat, good friend of this show and a Hennepin County commissioner for a lot of years to help get involved in.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.